From Williamsport to Uniontown, Pittsburgh to Elizabethtown, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the battle over redistricting threatens to upend the election calendar as the partisan divide in Harrisburg has made consensus elusive. David Taylor and our Capitol Watch crew are here to discuss the impact. And is the crowded field of candidates vying to become Pennsylvania's next governor a blessing or a curse? I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. The crowded field of candidates seeking the Republican nomination for governor has grown even larger in recent weeks, but the state Republican Party has begun the process of vetting those candidates, with Delaware County businessman David White, former U.S. Attorney for Eastern Pennsylvania Bill McSwain, and former Congressman Lou Barletta topping the first straw poll. Meanwhile, Jeff Bartos, who was the GOP candidate for lieutenant governor in 2018, drew the most support of the party's central caucus for the U.S. Senate seat being vacated by Senator Pat Toomey. On the Democratic side, Congressman Connor Lamb was endorsed for that Senate seat by Philadelphia Mayor Bill Kenney. Among the candidates in the Democratic U.S. Senate primary are Montgomery County Commissioner Valerie R. Cush and Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman. And if you want to dine at a Philadelphia restaurant, you better bring your COVID-19 vaccination card. Following the lead of New York and other major cities, Philadelphia will no longer accept a negative COVID-19 test for admission to restaurants and other indoor venues, but will require proof of vaccination. This comes amid hopeful signs that infections from the Omicron variant are reaching a peak, but many hospitals have become overstressed by a convergence of the COVID-19 pandemic and the flu season. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The legislative agenda in Harrisburg features a long list of serious and substantial policy issues, but the focus is instead on congressional and legislative redistricting, which has sharpened the political divide. Our Capitol Watch crew is here to explain the impact. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. On this week's program, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, thanks for being with us.
Great to be here again, David. Thank you.
Outstanding. And our good friend, Steve Bloom, Vice President of Pennsylvania's free market think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks for being here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here with you, David.
Well, you know, we are, you know, I don't want to be overly dramatic, but a lot of times it feels like we're looking down the barrel of a gun with the really monumental decisions that are going to be made in the coming months, and by year's end, a lot of really, really consequential decisions are going to be made that are going to affect the future, not just of Pennsylvania, but also of the nation.
Yeah, let's think about this, David. And I know really the theme of the show is to take a look under the dome, what's happening in the Capitol in Pennsylvania. And so I just want to run through some of those things.
Yes, sir.
So first, you know, folks know that they I think are generally aware this is a year in which there's going to be some elections.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
One of those elections is going to be for a new governor of Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. because our current governor, Tom Wolf, is termed out through the constitutional limits on the number of terms he can serve. So there will be a new governor elected this fall. That election is set for November 8th. But before that election can happen, there has to be a primary election where each of the major political parties will select their candidate for the November election for governor. So you have a Democratic primary that's going to be happening and a Republican primary currently scheduled for May 17th. Those things are happening. Also, there will be a lieutenant governor elected, mm-hmm. in, again, parallel process, both mm-hmm. parties and a primary and a final election in November. You have every member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives.
203,
all up for election. Mm-hmm. In this cycle, again, primaries and a general election in the fall. You have half the members of the Pennsylvania Senate, so that's 25 out of the 50, mm-hmm. up for election this year, primary general election, so all those things happening. You also have the retirement of our U.S. Senator, one of our U.S. Senators, Pat Toomey,
uh-huh.
who has chosen not to run for re-election for another six-year term in the U.S. Senate. So there is going to be a primary and a general election for a new senator.
Yes.
Primary, as in the case with the governor's race, there are numerous candidates already lined up to jump into those primary races and try to capture their party's nomination. In this case, on both sides of the aisle, you have literally, at this point, you have celebrities, billionaires, and millionaires lining up in the Republican Party seeking to get that nomination. And in the Democratic Party, you have a whole slew of folks also scrambling to try to get that Democratic nomination for U.S. Senator.
Yeah.
You have all of Pennsylvania's congressional delegation to the House of Representatives up for election.
Right.
So that's we have
in new districts.
In new districts. And that's the part I was going to get to.
Yes, sir.
So all those elections. And keep in mind that those federal elections in particular, the election of new congressmen and women and the election of a new U.S. senator, quite likely will determine the balance of power in the U.S. Congress and will define President Biden's agenda. They'll either hem him in as they have tried to do, but it's an evenly divided U.S. Senate right now with Democrats in control of the Congress. Republicans have tried to hem in President Biden with some success and some failures, but this election could shift the balance of power in the U.S. Senate, either keep it evenly divided or shift it to the Democrats or Republicans, and same in the U.S. House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm.
Those seats, there's 17 will come from Pennsylvania. We're a purple state. Anything could happen. But those elections in Pennsylvania could also determine the power in the House of Representatives. And literally, we in Pennsylvania are probably going to be setting the agenda for the United States over the coming 2 to 6 years because of these elections.
I think it's impossible to overstate how incredibly important Pennsylvania is in this upcoming election. Just like you just went through the reasons why, Steve. But I think just from Pennsylvania particularly, the last time we were electing a new governor at the same as a U.S. senator was 1958. Mm-hmm. So at the national level, this is critically important for the reasons you just stated. But in Pennsylvania, this is a watershed election. I mean, for so many reasons.
And this doesn't ordinarily happen. And adding to the complexity, this is also the year after the most recent decennial U.S. census, which means that for those congressional races I mentioned and for those Pennsylvania legislative, the Pennsylvania House and Senate races, there have to be entirely new districts drawn to reflect the new population. Well, that process is not going well so far.
Yeah.
There is a lot of contention, and it appears, and we may know more by the end of January, but it appears that both the state Senate and House districts and the map of congressional districts may end up being determined not by the legislative process or by the Legislative Reapportionment Commission, respectively, but instead by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court.
Right, and that they seized control of the process in 2018, where they overturned the maps that were duly instituted in 2011, and they handed the power that, you know, should be diffused between, you know, all of the different stakeholders, and instead they consolidated that power into one out-of-state academic and gave him the power to draw the maps himself with no appeal and no accountability. And so that really is another, you know, roll of the dice as to what will these districts look like, who will be running where. And also, this is often the time when veteran lawmakers will look at the, you know, the uphill climb of reacquainting himself or herself with an entirely new set of constituents and instead, you know, choose to retire.
And so here we are in January. February 15th is the opening day of the 3-week period in which all these candidates for all these offices have to go out and start collecting signatures from citizens in order to get on the ballot, which, if you've ever been through that process, is an onerous process. A lot of work goes into it, and there's a lot of difficulties you encounter, people doing signing incorrectly and so forth and so on, and official legal challenges to the signatures. So every party has to get out there, get their signatures, get plenty of extra signatures in case there's any flaws in any of the ones they did get, and then submit that by the end of a 3-week period. I think it's March 8th is the current deadline to submit that and get on the ballot. Well, if the districts aren't designed yet, no one can go out and start collecting signatures because they don't know what the districts look like.
And those signatures have to be from constituents
in that district.
In the district.
And so
registered voters.
Correct.
And we are looking at the very likely potential that the primary that's now set for May 17th could end up being delayed because the maps aren't ready and no one can go out and get their signatures and so forth. So the complexity is intense. But what I think we ought to think about too is, what does this mean? Like what?
Right.
All the results of all these elections, what kind of issues hang in the balance?
Well, you're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation.
Well, since we're talking about elections, and you talk about what's at stake, Steve, I want to bring up the fact that the Secretary of State in Pennsylvania is actually appointed by the governor. So if folks remember back to, you know, the controversies surrounding the 2020 election and, you know, some of the rule changes that were made at the last minute by the Secretary of State's office, that Secretary of State is appointed by the governor. So that is one of the things I believe that's at stake in this election is the governor will control who administers our elections, you know, for the next 4 years.
Yeah, Rebecca, so, that's exactly right.
So when you say it's complex, you're absolutely right. And a lot of those decisions about how that complexity is handled is done by the governor's administration through the Secretary of State.
Yeah.
So that let's start off there
when
we talk about, you know, what the stakes are.
And let's furthermore, Rebecca, that's a very important point, and that the current secretary is only the acting secretary.
Yeah,
like hasn't
right.
even been put up for proper confirmation by the Pennsylvania State Senate, and you know in the 2020 election, and I'm not going to wander into the you know the swamp of like you know was it fair, was it not fair? It's like look,
no.
there were irregularities that must not be allowed to happen again. There was political interference by the courts. There was corrupt political interference by the Department of State and the Secretary of the Commonwealth. And then beyond that, you also had unequal administration of state campaign law and the elections themselves by these outside dollars that came in, you know, for the actual physical administration of the election. Like those are things that must never be allowed to happen again because they directly, you know, call into question whether or not the election was fair.
And during this current legislative session, then after that 2020 election cycle, there were a number of proposals, and they were, I think, genuine compromise proposals to address many of those issues that arose in 2020. And unfortunately, because Governor Wolf chose to take a rather extreme position, he vetoed that legislation instead of signing it into law because it included a few things he didn't want. It was, again, compromise legislation.
Yes.
It had passed both the House and the Senate, and it was not. Particularly skewed toward any one political party or the other, but Governor Wolf wanted his way or no way, and so he vetoed that. So at this point, it appears like the administration of the election in 2022, both elections, primary and general, will be under the same exact set of proven to be somewhat inadequate laws and regulations that were in effect in 2020.
Yes, and let me just again make the point as clearly as I can. One of the foundational principles of our representative form of government is that the laws are supposed to apply equally to everyone, and that especially in statewide processes like statewide elections, that the law should be administered and applied the same way in all of the political subdivisions. But that didn't happen in 2020, and that you had ballots counted differently in different counties. Most notably, there was a state Senate race in western Pennsylvania where the ballots were counted differently in Allegheny County versus Westmoreland
and
County.
And it was an extremely close race.
It was. And that gave – then that the political interference by the courts gave victory to the Democratic candidate, the incumbent, whereas if you had just applied the law – plainly as written, that the challenger would have won. And so again, this is why we have laws, so that when it comes down to something that close, we know how to, you know, reach decisions as to what is a fair or just outcome. And so when you have political interference in the courts like that, it, you know, again, it undermines public confidence in the legitimacy of our elections.
And if you think about some of these issues that are at stake here at the state level, the future of our children's education, and that's become an incredibly hot issue over these last couple of years. And parents are demanding that they have more of a say in customizing their own children's education and making sure that they know what their kids are being taught and how. So that's a big issue. We have the whole issue of our energy economy. Here in Pennsylvania, we've become the largest energy exporting state. We have really changed the balance of geopolitical power in the world because of our clean natural gas resources that we're just starting to be able to utilize well.
Yes.
And the future of that whole industry and all the jobs it creates and all the tax revenue it creates, that is hanging in the balance because we have some political parties on the left, some political actors on the left who want to shut all that down.
Yes.
We've got to keep that going. We've got to keep that open. Our future depends on it, our kids' future.
And as part of that also, Governor Wolf's plan to impose a carbon tax on electricity generation in the Commonwealth.
And
this is a very highly contested issue where the governor is going it alone, and he's doing it not only without the approval of the legislature, he's doing it over the objections of the legislature, and he's like butting right up against veto override supermajorities in the legislature. Like this is not the will of the people's elected representatives.
Well, and that's true, but that's one of the things to keep in mind, too, is that Reggie proposal is a regulation, and governors control regulations for the most part. There is some legislative involvement in the regulatory process, but regulations are put into effect for the most part by, administrations,
the executive branch.
Agencies under an administration, and they can also be reversed by the next administration, which is why regulations are not the best way to govern. Because it can be a volatile, situation where you have a regulation that comes in effect and one administration is reversed in the next. But Reggie, the governor, unlike the other states and Reggie, the governor here has elected to go about that through a regulation instead of a statute. That means that it can be reversed. Now, the harm that's done before it can be reversed by the next governor is an important consideration. But when we're talking about, the impact of a governor's election, all regulations are potentially on the table because they are controlled by the governor for the most part.
And if you look at what happened in Virginia, Governor Youngkins, who was just elected, one of his very first acts as the newly installed governor of Virginia was to take Virginia out of the Reggie Compact.
Yes.
Yeah.
And here in Pennsylvania, we have a governor who's still hanging on by the grip of his last year in office.
Yes.
And refusing to bow to the obvious majority interest in Pennsylvania of keeping us out of Reggie and keeping our natural gas and energy industry growing.
And so this is, these are the stakes. I think also what will be on the ballot, even though he's leaving office, I think that Governor Wolf's leadership style and whether or not it's acceptable for a governor to act the way that Governor Wolf has acted unilaterally in many instances, whether it was with the lockdown and the smothering of businesses that were forced to be closed, whether it's these very aggressive, extreme environmental policies that he's attempting to enact without the approval of the legislature, his unwillingness to engage with lawmakers on things like election law, or with being a fair broker on things like the legislative redistricting. Governor Wolf has been an extremely aggressive executive, and this is going to be on the ballot. Do people want another governor who acts that way?
And quirky and unpredictable too. Just recently, the governor said he was not going to propose any legislative maps himself in this process of redistricting.
Uh huh.
And he was criticizing the maps that the legislators had come up with and criticizing the maps that the Reapportionment Commission had come up with, but he was refusing to make a map of his own. Then after saying he wouldn't do it, he then released a couple of maps the other day.
Sure, why not?
And said, here's my maps. The same thing has happened over a number of issues, the same with voter ID. An extremely popular issue.
Yes. Common sense.
80-some percent of Pennsylvanians want to see voter ID. People, Democrats, independents, Republicans, all are in favor of it. Governor Wolf vetoed voter ID. That was the reason he vetoed the election reform bills, he said.
Yeah.
Then a few weeks later, he said he was actually considering voter ID as being okay. So the legislature went through crafting a new bill to present to him, but then he sort of lost interest again.
Yes.
But that's the kind of governing style. It's been arbitrary and at times capricious, but also very opaque and mysterious.
Yes. For all the things that are uncertain, the one thing that is certain, you, dear listeners, is that Rebecca and Steve and I are going to be here to try to navigate these waters with you together. And as I always say, representative self-government is not a spectator sport. Choose to be engaged. Choose to live life with your brain turned on. Know who your lawmakers are. Know where they stand and how they vote and all those other things. So, with the last moments we have, Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about you and your organization?
Sure. The Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association is at pmta.org.
Outstanding. Steve, where do people go to learn about you and what you do?
And the Commonwealth Foundation is at commonwealthfoundation.org.
Awesome. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So, from Rebecca and Steve and me, thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. On a frigid Saturday in January, as most Pennsylvanians settled in for a long Martin Luther King Day weekend, few were thinking of a primary election currently scheduled for, hopefully, a warmer day in May. But the official process of selecting the next governor of Pennsylvania got underway at a suburban Harrisburg hotel, where Republicans began vetting a field of 16 candidates. It will take some time, likely until primary election day, for the historically large GOP field to be narrowed to just one nominee. Meanwhile, state Democrats have one lone contender, Attorney General Josh Shapiro, who will advance to the general election, barring a political development of epic proportions. The large and highly accomplished Republican field is reflective of deep optimism in GOP ranks that 2022 is going to be a wave election year. In political terms, wave means a national tide that sweeps one party or the other into offices at all levels. Events of the past few weeks have given energy to the building red wave. President Joe Biden is ending his first year in office with barely a third of the nation approving of his job performance. Inflation is at a 40-year high. COVID-19 is running amok. Biden remains tarnished by his chaotic surrender in Afghanistan, while Russia and China appear poised to present major foreign policy challenges. Here in Penn's Woods, incumbent Governor Tom Wolf is likewise unpopular, as his administration has botched handling everything from the pandemic response to elections. Wolf suffered a historic rebuke last May as voters took the extraordinary step of amending the state constitution to bring an end to his emergency powers, which most had come to view as harmful and draconian. With those millstones around his neck, Shapiro will need the perceived advantage of an uncontested primary just to remain competitive. The big question is, will the GOP be disadvantaged by taking until the primary for the large field of Republican candidates to narrow to one nominee? Much, of course, depends on how the candidates conduct themselves. To date, they have trained their fire on the Wolf-Shapiro administration. The lack of a frontrunner leaves Shapiro with no target to attack, but if the GOP primary turns fractious, that advantage will be neutralized. So let's turn to history as a guide. In the modern political era, which would be since adoption of the current state constitution in 1968, there have been two gubernatorial elections in which Republicans were faced with a large field of candidates, although admittedly not as large as this year. In 1978, the first two-term governor, Milton Schaap, was leaving office after having run an administration noted mostly for corruption. That had given rise to Republican hopes, and seven candidates appeared on the primary ballot. The field was largely distinguished and included Arlen Specter, who would go on to become a long-serving U.S. senator, the then state Senate minority leader Henry Hager, Robert Butera, the Republican leader in the state House, former U.S. attorney for the Southeastern District of Pennsylvania David Marston, and Elvin Joseph Jacobson, a former psychiatric patient who campaigned on having been medically diagnosed as sane. Well, the primary was won by Richard Thornburgh, the former U.S. attorney for Western Pennsylvania, who then triumphed over Pittsburgh Mayor Peter Flaherty by campaigning to clean up the corruption that had festered under Schaap. He then proceeded to do just that. In 1994, Republicans again had a large field of candidates from which to choose, and again the field was distinguished. It included Mike Fisher, who had previously been nominated for lieutenant governor and who years later would become the GOP gubernatorial nominee, Attorney General Ernie Priate, former Philadelphia mayoral nominee Sam Katz, state senator and former state GOP party chairman Earl Baker, and others. Congressman Tom Ridge from Erie prevailed in the primary contest and went on to defeat Lieutenant Governor Mark Single in the general election. It is true, in each of those years, Democrats had their own primary ballots, but the end result was the primary contest built the ultimate GOP nominee into being a contender. The current crop of Republican gubernatorial candidates lack statewide name ID, but Tom Ridge began the 1994 campaign self-described as, quote, the man nobody knew from a city nobody has been to. By November, everyone knew who Tom Ridge was, the next governor of Pennsylvania. It is a long way to May and even longer to November. As history has shown, competitive primaries may or may not be a pathway to victory, but neither are they a roadblock. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. And once again, it is time to begin talking about the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. The premier annual grassroots conservative event will be held April 1st and 2nd at the Penn Harris Hotel in Camp Hill. This year's featured speaker will be Fox News host, former Congressman Trey Gowdy. The conference will include forums spotlighting candidates for governor of Pennsylvania and for U.S. Senator. An added feature this year is a pre-conference election integrity summit to be held on Thursday, March 31st. As always, there will be speakers, panel presentations, and workshops. Complete information and registration for the 2022 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is available at paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.